Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle, Kaylin Carr, Taquito, General Sao. They're here as well. We'll see them very, very soon. But those days are numbered, Doyle.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to the studio. We're told next week.
It's not pet friendly.
Not pet friendly.
Have we checked on that? I actually haven't checked on that. We need one of the suits, and by suits, I mean Anders, to weigh in and tell us whether the studio is pet friendly.
Are they union? Are they freelance?
They're both strong union cats.
Yeah, I figured absolutely. As much. Well,
yeah. What do they negotiate into their contracts as
5 a.m. feedings every day?
Gotcha. Gotcha. That's very, very important. Are you going to miss the days of sitting in your window and letting the cats paw you and commiserate with either your takes or David's?
Every time I am not around my cats, I miss my cats. So yes, I will miss the day, but I am looking forward to getting into the studio a couple times a week. And just it's another step past the pandemic, which is still going on, but, you know, is more manageable than it was 2 years ago.
Do you think are you guys nervous about this at all? I haven't spoken to any of you in person in, you know, I don't even know. Like, we talked about maybe
we saw
meeting
each other in St. Louis.
We did. Yeah. We had a dinner. So that correct. Was some practice. But I know we talked about meeting up for beers.
And we just can't, nobody can do it. Nobody can bear the thought of actually conversing.
Yeah.
Without, you know, like a bathroom, our own bathroom close and all of our creature comforts. It's going to be hard to go back into the wild. I agree with you. Very difficult.
I will say my men's league manager changed our formation up last week and I feel re-energized. So I can only imagine how this will work for me. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm very excited.
So MLS Match Day 6 to come. We'll talk about CONCACAF Nations League. We got some great mail. Revs fans have assaulted me online and we are now going to spend however many minutes they demand. In the meantime, I need to know what tactical shift you have made on your men's league team.
We went from a 3-4-1, which is a bit more of a defensive base, to a 2-4-2. Now, throttling teams, playing in their halves, pushing the game, and it requires more responsibility from me, which has in turn pulled my level up even higher, which who knew was even possible.
You're in the two-man back line, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I got to cover more ground, more responsibility, more tackles. Love in life.
This is the important stuff. This is what we need to know. Any and all men's league anecdotes, co-ed, women's league, whatever it is.
Don't bring up children. Co-ed Rainbow, was brutal on Monday night. Brutal.
Rainbow narwhal references. All of that is welcome on this show. We celebrate soccer culture, big and small. So we
I did get kicked out of a men's league last week. I don't want to talk about it, though. Let's move on.
I mean, what? Wait a minute.
What?
I want to talk about
what
it.
What show did you think that you're on right now? Like,
kicked out means red carded or kicked out means
they ended the practice.
A practice?
Yeah.
We're not talking about a game. We're talking about practice.
Are we going full Brant Bronico out here? What are we doing? What's going on?
Yeah, we need to get Christina Uncle on the on the line here. Yeah, I'm trying to move on from it. I'm trying to move on.
It was. My appetite is whetted. Maybe when we see each other in person, I could get a couple beers into you and then you'll be willing to to relive your trauma for all of
us. We'll ply you with adult beverages, maybe something brown to honor this show's past. All right, let's talk about the national teams. Get it out of the way and then we'll go full on into Major League Soccer. Don't worry, I haven't forgotten about you, Revs fans. Please get out of my mentions. USMNT and the Canadian national team. On to the semifinals of the CONCACAF Nations League. U.S. will play Mexico. Canada will play Panama. Those are your final four there. Some other news from the Nations Leagues. It's not just League A. There's League B and League C. So in League B, four teams were promoted. That's Cuba, Nicaragua, Haiti, and Guatemala. They also qualified for this summer's Gold Cup. Out of League A, you have Mexico, Jamaica, Panama, Costa Rica, Canada, Honduras, United States, and El Salvador. Congratulations to Hugo Perez, who will also make the Gold Cup, and Qatar is in, as well as three qualifiers from Leagues B and C. There's a tournament in June to decide all that. The U.S. had a nice window, Doyle. Not a perfect window, but sort of this like purgatory window, you might call it. Like, who's the leadership going forward? We don't know. It's Anthony Hudson for now. There's nobody that's even hired, I don't think, to hire the next head coach. So yeah, we're just kind of going with it. Give me a positive.
Yeah, I mean, it was hard to take anything from it. The positive is that they scored a bunch of goals against Granada and nobody got hurt. A few guys got cap-tied, like Alex Zendejas is officially cap-tied now. Taylor Booth, he wants to play in the World Cup someday. So obviously he's going to choose the U.S. over Italy. So he is now officially cap-tied to the U.S. Johnny Cardoso, officially cap-tied. He's eligible for Brazil. So like logistical stuff like that. 180 minutes of guys, some played well, some didn't play so well, but nobody got hurt. That's a positive. So the frustration is like it felt like because of the nature of the GM search and the sporting director search and the coaching search, like we, like you said, we don't know who's going to hire the guy who hires the guys who hires the guys. It didn't feel like there was that.
Sorry, that's an inside joke for my people. Continue.
It didn't feel like there was that much to learn from this one. And that includes like Anthony Hudson changed the formation a little bit to a double pivot. So it was a 2-3 instead of a 3-2 in central midfield. And there was a lot of talk after the Granada game about how that unlocked Gio Reyna and made for more free flowing soccer. It's like it didn't like, guys, it's Granada. Let's not over-index, to borrow Weeby's word, for that one result. And I think we saw that against El Salvador when they just struggled to get into the half spaces and break down a really well-drilled team. So it was like all of this adds up to like just a pretty forgettable, like when come 2026, when we're in the World Cup, like this window will have meant nothing.
Oh. Woo.
Yeah,
I mean Ricardo Pepi might disagree with you. Seemed like he had
a nice little
resurgent moment for Ricardo, and I thought the goal against El Salvador came right on for Daryl Dike and makes a great run in behind, super strong to kind of shrug off the initial challenge and gets on the ball, and it's what you want from him: be patient, be strong, have the technical ability to finish. So that was nice, right, Kalen? What else was nice? Maybe from Canada's side, you got something from us, from our neighbors to the north.
Yeah, Kyle Aaron, goals, getting back, continuing his good form, confidence. He did miss a penalty to get a first half hat trick, but this Canada team just, it's funny because I think because of the World Cup where they didn't quite hit the notes that we had expected them to or hoped that they might, you forget, I think there's still that battle for dominance of North America, and this team, you see the way they get going. Jonathan David got one, Osorio had a really nice finish. It was a good like little ball in where he makes the run in behind, use the left foot to tuck it away. So yeah, Tejan looked dangerous. Alphonso Davies, probably should mention him too. So yeah, Canada was rolling.
They are dangerous. It's interesting to watch Kyle Larin right now too in Spain, because it seemed like he was bouncing around. Bruges just didn't really work out for him. He signed a 3-year deal and then just didn't play very much. Goes to Spain to Valladolid, and he might keep them up. He is getting goals.
It should be noted he's playing as a center forward for Valladolid, and he wasn't getting a chance. It's the weirdest thing. Everybody in Belgium thinks that Kyle Larin is a left winger for some reason, and it's the weirdest thing. He's playing as a center forward now for Valladolid, and he's 5 goals in 8 games, and as you said, he might keep them up. He's legit. It's been a good week for UConn.
We have a lot. Oh God, we have a lot of Belgium-based listeners. We've learned over the years. So if you're listening now, spread the word. Kyle Larin, not a left winger. Just put it in the streets. All right. I'm gonna go with Miles Robinson back to beast mode. You know, you always want to see whether it be Aaron Long before him and now Miles, guys recover from really big injuries in their career and do it quickly and get back to a level where you're like, oh God, is he back? Is he right back? Like physically, you. You're not seeing a beat missed right now. Of course, you know, let's see him in MLS for a couple months. But so far, really good returns for Miles Robinson, and maybe really good returns for Miles Robinson because he's a free agent at the end of the season. He has decided very intentionally that he will not yet be signing any sort of contract extension from Atlanta United, despite the fact that there's one on the table. And I think that's a super understandable strategy for him to have. Like, let me get back. Let me show people where I'm at. Let me play in a Gold Cup, reintegrate myself with the U.S. This Atlanta team's going to go up, and maybe my dollars will go up as well, or my opportunities. So this is a big hit for Miles.
At Media Marketing, everyone kept asking Miles how he was feeling and how he's doing, and he got really annoyed, and he goes, should I just do a backflip? I can do a backflip, prove that I'm fine. Everyone's like, nah, I don't think you should do a backflip.
That would have been cool. Did you say yes?
No, not at all. Yeah, in those rooms with that space, not at all. But this is his version of doing a backflip, is playing really well for the U.S. and Atlanta United.
Yes, yes. We'll see how it works out for him, but it seems like it was a well-organized plan. Dave, give us something. We have already given the honorary Canadian first up there to Kalen. So,
well, classic Kalen, you know, a man of the world, I think respect is what most people would say. To both Kalens on this show. But I'm going to go, I don't know, maybe left field here, but I'm going to go with Canada. And I'm going to say Derek Cornelius. You could also put Scott Kennedy in here. I think coming out of the last 3 years for Canada, you can see where many of the positions are going, right? You know who the forwards are. Jonathan David will only get better. Alphonso Davies will only get better. Steven Eustachio is in the prime of his career. The two big question marks in this team were center back taking over for Steven Vittoria as he continues to get older, or replacing him, and Atiba Hutchinson, because at some point, all things come to an end, as Doyle has taught us so well. I don't know that we have the answer on the Atiba replacement, but Derek Cornelius getting the transfer to Malmo, so hopefully a starter for them when their season finally begins, getting the starts in these games, and then Scott Kennedy coming back from injury as well. That's massive for this Canada team. I think if they can get better play at the center back position, it allows them more flexibility to do more things. We saw how in the end it caught up to them against Belgium, and then as the World Cup went along and their want to play a higher line and press teams higher and play more aggressive. And so getting younger and more athletic at that position, I think, is really big for Canada.
How'd you like the not yet retiring, but gonna retire, but everything's good, and I really enjoy my time with Canada, Atiba Hutchinson quote that he put out?
Is TFC not going to sign him?
It's a good question.
Like, right? What are they doing at this point?
Yeah. He would like, it's got to be a numbers thing, or just in terms of like, can they agree on a number that works for both parties? Because he fits not only their positional needs on the field, but their age profile. Apparently, he's like right in the sweet spot for what they look for.
Brings the average age down.
Okay. Gunnar Gabe hit us up, said, can Timothy Tillman play himself into USMNT call-up? It might be Timothy. It might be Malik. I don't know. There's multiple Tillmans playing well here. So
I think it's a reference to Timothy. I think we'll just we'll Ving Rames that one over to the guys at Scuffed. Vince has been Timothy Tillman's number one fan for a while now. The kids looked really good. Other than that first Portland game for LAFC where he was afraid to pass the ball forward, he's looked very comfortable as a number eight. And one thing, even with the formation change for the U.S., there's just not a lot of proved out depth at that number eight position, right? It's Weston McKennie, Yunus Musa, and Luca Della Torre are pretty clearly the top three. And then it's guys behind them trying to prove it at the club level. Guys like Keaton Parks, Paxton Pomacall, and Eric Williamson are the three that I want to see more of. But Tillman keeps playing like he has for LAFC. He could be in that. He could be in that mix.
All right, let's hit the revs. It's time. Match day 6 here. You know how to watch it. MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. Make sure you tune in to MLS 360. MLS Wrap-Up is at the end of the night, also on demand. Usually hits Apple TV about 10 a.m. on Sundays. That has every single goal, every single highlight. Myself, and I believe it's going to be Shep Messing this week with Jillian Sackvitz. So Shep in the building ought to be interesting. Nigel is on vacation somewhere in South Florida. Smoking a cigar or doing something
maybe
similarly
he's gonna pop
English.
Up at GA Cup on just for fun.
Is he?
I don't know.
Roll through Bradenton.
If I was planning a vacation, that's probably what I'd plan it around.
How far is that from you know South Florida? But I don't know where Bradenton is, to be honest. I should. That's one of those
Bradenton
things.
Bradenton is south of Tampa, and north of Sarasota on the west side.
Okay.
I think South Florida references Miami area.
Okay, gotcha. So all right, Nigel. Well, I'll let Nigel know. We'll see if he can make a quick jaunt across the state.
No, make. I'm just saying, if you want to have a good vacation.
Sure, yeah. No, yourself. We're just trying to help him out. We're trying to help him out here. Just Andy advised. From Revs Nation sort of sums up the sentiment in my mentions. I always put out a tweet before every show saying, hey, what should we talk about? This is your opportunity to put your finger on the ETR scale, so to speak. Like, we are going to over-index on the stories that are, you know, for lack of a better word, sort of mainstream MLS sometimes. Like, if St. Louis City has won 5 straight games, we are going to talk about that. If a team wins the double, we're going to talk about that. If your team is not winning the double or doing something similarly interesting, you might not get that opportunity unless you're the Galaxy. And then, of course, as Doyle referenced, we will over-index on talking about you.
That's the third
you.
Time we've used that word. So we're done with that word for a couple.
Got it.
Okay.
Okay, we've reached our quota. All right, Andy from Revs Nation says, the Revs were even in the title of the latest episode. As such, I thought they'd get something of a full look. Nope. 3 to 4 minutes of pretty much just talking about Noel Buck. Not that he doesn't deserve it. A bunch of other people literally timing out our segment. I was like, hey, we talked about them a ton on the last show. And like, yeah, man, 6 minutes, like, into like not you, enough.
When I coached youth soccer in Chicago, when I was playing there, I had some parents timing the exact minutes of how long I was playing their kid. And then going to the club director.
And that's how you met Claudio Reyna.
Sorry. No, luckily, actually, Dennis Hamlet was my sporting director at the time for the club. And he was able to shield me from this nonsense because his parents wanted to like change the portion they were paying based on the minutes. It was like madness. Won't surprise anybody, but anyways.
Just know that Rebs fan, you've now been compared to youth soccer parents in your zealotry for figuring out just how long your team has been talked about and why it is unfair compared to other teams. Here's some other mail here. Hashwalder says, how many more wins do the Rebs need to be taken seriously? Obviously, the beginning of the season and the 4-0 loss against LAFC was terrible, but it seems like the Rebs don't have respect from around the league, even though they're first in the East. What do they need to do to earn it? So maybe we'll start there. Anybody want to jump on the how many more wins do the Revs need to be taken seriously? I thought we were.
I'm rejecting the premise of those questions. I'm rejecting the premise of us not covering the Revs well enough or long enough on previous shows. Like we dove in repeatedly about how they switched the formation to more of a 4-4-2 diamond with a tight. Like deep lying central midfield thing where Buck and Blessing with when he's healthy sort of supporting Polster so they don't get overwhelmed in central midfield like has they've been susceptible in the past when they played a diamond with a wide diamond. We talked at length about how Barrero and his ability to stretch the field and act as a winger even when he's playing as a second forward makes it work. We have repeatedly praised both of their fullbacks. I suppose we could have given a little bit more praise to Dave Romney as well. Cause I think he's been very good for them, in central defense.
But didn't Dave Romney get a TAM contract? That's pretty good. Pretty good praise.
Yeah. That's pretty good praise.
A lot about Petrovic.
Yeah. We've talked a lot about Petrovic. We, I think uniformly believe he is the favorite for goalkeeper of the year.
Did anyone vote for him for early MVP or on their shortlist?
I saw him on other people's shortlist, but I did not have the gumption to do it myself. Yeah,
and we did talk on Monday about how they switched their formation to more of a flat four for the first hour against DC United, and I think I reject the premise.
I yelled at Weeby because he said that they couldn't win without Heal, and then I said Heal played 30 minutes in 2 games, and they got 6 points.
Yeah,
which is a debate. Okay, the Nashville win is their best win so far. Mm-hmm. That's part of the other thing is, you know, they went and played LAFC, and right, in the end, they got smoked. They lost 4-0.
But it wasn't without Heal, right? Like, he came on and changed the game.
DC against DC.
Yeah.
But I just... Part of it is they beat Houston at home. They went and beat Charlotte, which is a good win. Messy in the way they did it, but a good win. Yeah. And then they beat, you know, DC United. So the other question would be, when do you consider that? I think you asked me, do I think they're closer to Supporters Shield or 10th last show? And I said 10th because I do still think they're in the 5-8 range probably. And the end of this is to beat some really good teams and do it consistently. NYCFC, I think at home would be a pretty good start for that.
Yeah.
The nice thing for them, though, by the way, when you look at the schedule, like just plot it through the next couple months. For their next five are at home. That's New York City FC, Montreal, Sporting Kansas City, and Cincinnati. So, I mean, Cincinnati is the hardest of those, but you get them at home. You're at Columbus in that spell, at Toronto, at Miami, at Philly after that. So they've got an opportunity the next five games to sort of build up a little bit of a cushion to where, you know, in the summer, things can go a little rocky if they want it to. My point on Carlos Hill is not that they can't win without him, Dave. It's that they can't compete with the top teams in the league without him.
Definitely.
Like, they're not creating much as it is now.
But they beat Nashville 1-0. Isn't Nashville a top team?
No.
Who's a top team? Let's do this then. This will make this a quicker conversation.
LAFC, Seattle, Cincinnati are, in my mind, the three pretty clear top teams. St. Louis keeps winning. We'll eventually have to put St. Louis in that mix as well.
So three of them are in the West.
And Philadelphia is still a top team. I don't care what has happened through five games as they're trying to juggle CCL.
All right, so three of them are in the West, so that's probably not as many matchups with them as you say. So yeah, they can't beat Cincinnati and Philly without Carlos Hill.
They play Cincy in a few weeks. Fine. I think I'm on that one. But I think this New England team, I do think we are over indexing. Oh man.
Now oh wow. What happened to you?
Trap laid.
You put it out there. It's like going with Montreal Impact. You can't not say Impact when you're trying not to. But that LAFC thing, I think, has become a little bit outsized in their perception because they got ran over in that match. But it actually was towards the back half of that game where LAFC just really steamrolled them. And that was without Carlos Hill as well, so which we already mentioned. So I think there is some sort of effect of like, this is the game people aren't really tuning in always potentially to like the Houston Revs game. But when you play against LAFC, suddenly like that's your moment in the sun to prove that you're legit or not. And that's the like litmus test. So I think there was something where it's maybe, you know, that was 4-0. So people are saying, okay, well that this team is not a top team. But when I think of the additions they made, Latif Blessing for me, and fantastic signing, especially for when you consider what they got him for. You look at Romney as well, consistent the way his partnership with Kessler has been there. That's helped them a ton because they didn't have depth at that position. Andrew Farrell was hurt. Then they've emerged with some young players bringing in, which has been sort of uncharacteristic of the Revs in the past. I don't think they could have ever made a signing like Dylan Barrero without selling Tejan Buchanan. Like I just, to get a 21-year-old Colombian player with that kind of profile and some of the clubs that were interested in him from Europe already before, like that, you wouldn't think that New England's going to move you on or you would have that opportunity to do that. He's the one question mark for me where 1 week I watch him and he's just lights out, looks like Tejan. You see it the next week, it's not the same. That consistency as far as really imposing himself on matches doesn't seem to be quite there yet. And so I think, but when you think about those pieces of those additions from last year, it feels close to me. I would actually lean probably closer towards the top of the table for me than further down when I'm watching them.
I would say the other thing that's been really big for them is Gustavo Bow has looked like Gustavo Bow over the last 2 weeks. And even in that Nashville game, right? That's a great finish and that's a great moment. And so they do still have him. That's part of my pushback on the heel thing is, you know, Kalen just mentioned the depth that they've added, the options they've added. They can change the way they set up. And often we talk about like, what's the best 11? How does everyone fit together? But look at 6 weeks in, you barely ever have your best 11. I think the Revs have now built a team that can compete without it. And that's where I say, yeah, if teams are not at 100%, they have a top back line, a top goalkeeper and a match winner in Gustavo Bow still eligible. If Carlos Hill isn't there versus other teams, even ones in that conversation where you say, oh, so-and-so's missing. I don't know that they're capable of that.
What would it take to get them in that same category we're talking about in the East with Philly and Cincinnati?
A win over NYCFC.
Yeah, beat NYCFC, beat Cincinnati after that, and, you know, yeah, in 2 weeks after that.
Or even just like a well competed draw, well-contested draw with Cincinnati. And look, this game, this match day, this Saturday against NYCFC, this is a good one because NYCFC has been, you know, they have inflicted some misery on the Revs in the past. I'm thinking specifically of the 2021 playoffs where NYCFC, they were just able to control central midfield. And that was the weakness in the wide diamond. And we talked about it at the time, and we've talked about it repeatedly since then. Bruce Arena has spent kind of the past, a lot of last year, trying to figure out how to get as much attacking talent as he wants to on the field while not sacrificing central midfield. Because the gamble he made in 2021, and it paid off spectacularly in the regular season, was we will at times go 1v3 in central midfield because it allows us to play with two forwards and Carlos Gil and two shuttlers in a wide diamond that also get forward. And, oh, by the way, we also send our fullbacks forward. And it made for some spectacular regular season soccer. But then when they played NYCFC in the playoffs, NYCFC just destroyed them because they were going 3v1 in central midfield. Honestly, it looked like Kuva because Bruce made the same mistake with that U.S. team 5 years ago now, six, where it was like you play 1v3 in central midfield and like you're making a very clear choice about what you're going to sacrifice. The Revs aren't making that choice this year. Goes back to what I was trying to say at the top with Buck and whether it's Latif or someone else who plays as the other shuttler, they're always at least two and there's often three in central midfield, which gives Gil the platform to go wherever he wants, do Nico Ladero stuff as a playmaker. But it should give them the ability to match NYCFC just on pure numbers in central midfield in this game. And that'll be fascinating. And actually, it might actually tilt the scales a little bit because what we saw 2 weeks ago from NYCFC was when Sands was playing as a six, Keaton Parks, it wasn't a double pivot, man. Keaton Parks just went. Keaton Parks was pushing up and he and Santi Rodriguez were operating in the half. You were on that game, Kalen. I think you saw it. Those two guys were operating in the half spaces. And there were times where if James Sands, if his reads weren't perfect, then he was going to be going 1v2 or 1v3 in central midfield. And I think it actually happened a few times in the second half against DC. So it's become a really interesting tactical matchup from these two teams because of how the shoe is kind of on the other foot compared to 2 years ago. And if the Revs come out on the, like, I already think they're a top four team in the Eastern Conference. If they come out of this with 3 points, then they won't have proved me wrong.
The other thing to just keep in mind is Philly has Champions League. We've seen how that's kind of slowed their start to begin with. Cincinnati has maybe some question marks as far as who's going to still be on this team with interest over the longer term. So I think when you think of the advantages of what they don't have to deal with, I think they have a few less question marks over time. Now, I guess the big one, I guess, would maybe be Petrovic. It would be the one piece.
Yeah, Noah Buck, Jones, maybe.
If I'm
Dylan Barrero.
Yeah, if I'm Buck, I feel like he could take his time. I don't know what the interest is going to be for him, but him playing regularly right now, I've seen him grow in 4 games, like as far as just him going from, you know, match day one where he was solid, defensively aware, tracking runners. Now, like, you're seeing a little more of his range of passing. He's more comfortable even. He's played in a couple different spots. He can play across it. I think he has a passport. I think he has a UK passport.
Yes, he does.
So I think he's got some time, but I don't know. Sometimes it's always hard to know when that right moment is to go take your chance, but I feel like he's in a pretty good system and set up to, and he's earned his spot right now just through his play.
Let me ask you this, Dave. If they're going to go this 4-4-2 diamond, who are the two guys up top? They've got a laundry list of dudes. Had a bunch of people hit us up and ask about Josie Altidore. They're calling it the Josie Altidore situation, ... I don't know what that situation is other than Josie Altidore is on the team and available and has played. Giacomo Veroni, it continues to not get a huge role. Bobby Wood has gotten a lot of those minutes so far. Now Gustavo Bo is back. Obviously, Barrero can fill in. What's the ideal two in your mind?
I would say tomorrow. Gustavo Bo locked in. I'd say tomorrow would probably be Bo and Barrero, not tomorrow being this Thursday, but like if you were deciding right now, those are probably your top two performers. Depending on matchup, it would be Wood and Gustavo Bo. the hope is Veroni plays his way into that and you have the flexibility, because as Kalen said, Barrero's like a DP signing who's not. So you can miss on Veroni for a little while or give him a chance to get to the level because you've hit on other signings around him. But I would say tomorrow it would probably be Gustavo Bo and Dylan Barrero. And it would be like somewhat of a false nine situation, but you know Gustavo Bo is going to get chances off Carlos Hill. You know Barrero can take guys on in open space if he's playing as the one who's stretching the field for you from that more central position. And as Doyle has talked about a lot, that would be a setup where you probably have a number of players in central midfield who can protect Carlos Hill and allow him to do whatever it is he wants and find the ball wherever he wants.
Cool.
We gave those dorks enough time, man. Those complainers.
To be fair.
There is pressure, honestly. I played
to you dorks from us dorks.
We complained. It works. I played those kids. I don't want to deal with it.
It is very rich. We're like, hey, you dorks. You told us dorks to talk about the Revs for how many minutes? How many minutes was it, Anders? You're struggling with math in the chat right now. So.
Yeah, Anders is having a shocker. He got a new haircut and he looks like a suit. So it's just rough days for Anders.
Anders just doesn't really do work anymore. He manages people. Mm. So he'll connect with us offline.
Gotcha. Yeah, circle back. Mm. Okay, let's talk about those Cincinnati guys that may or may not be moving on. One guy we've been saying, hey, why don't you sign him to an extension? It might be advantageous for you is Lucho Costa. Lucho, it sounds like Laurel Flaher said that discussions are about to begin on a possible contract extension. Tommy Scoops followed that up with sources can confirm Cincy and star number 10 Lucho Costa in early talks about a new contract. Lucho is under team control through 2024. There's a team option for Cincy in 2024. Like if it came to shove, they'd pick it up, obviously, but they'd like to get extended. Lucho is 28. He's the club captain. He's real good. I don't think we have to talk about that much more. We've said before, hey, like, yeah, he's probably figured this out. It'd be good for the future of club, especially because Brenner and Brandon Vasquez may indeed move on. Brenner we covered, and it may come back around here as the hot stove heats up. But Brandon Vasquez is the first we've heard, Tom and many others, saying that Borussia Mönchengladbach are indeed heavily interested in Brandon Vasquez. Sky Germany first reporting on that one. No offer yet. Still very early. Other clubs interested as well. What do you think about that, Kalen?
Well, not surprised. Actually, I heard him speak in the preseason to Sebastian and Herc about this, and I think he was taking German. And he mentioned Germany as a league that he'd be interested in, that could fit his playing style. And we've seen a lot of Americans have success there. So I think it would make a ton of sense when you think of where his like next step is going to go. I think there was supposed to be somebody who was on, I think scouting at the match was one of the reports, those that they had sent somebody over to watch, mm-hmm. and it was a good one to come to. He finally gets that first goal. You can see the release from him as far as just what it meant, confidence that goes with it. If you're Lucho Acosta, going back to him, every time you see these reports about one of these players coming, that's just better negotiation tactic to have some leverage going forward. And he actually helps create this goal because Barrial is able to push so far high and Lucho goes wide, creates that wide overload, is able to just kind of, I think, a one-time ball. He releases him into the space. And then I think Dax and Walker got a little bit, their signals crossed as far as who's going to pick up Barrial as he came inside and was able to just get a pretty easy shot. And Brandon Vasquez follows it up. But yeah, it's a matter of when this is going to happen. You know that he's going to move on. Same thing goes with Brenner. You know, both of those guys at some point are going to be sold. That's the challenge of, you know, having a high flying attack of players that are young and want to go abroad at some point. So, but I think for Vasquez, with his emergence with the men's national team as well, it's the timing. Things are, I think, lining up for him. And I think a move pretty soon would probably help him take his game even to another level.
Especially as the depth chart for forward at the USMNT continues to grow. Or maybe Eltry. Depends on what Brandon Vasquez decides to do. He has options, obviously, both ways. As said, he's keeping him open. So, TBD on that one. What does Cincy need to show you this weekend? Home against Miami, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Doyle, as someone who has anointed them this year in the holy supporter shield oils.
The living waters,
right?
The supporters' shield.
Oh yeah. Sorry. Whatever it is.
What do they need to show? I mean, they just need to keep getting 3 points. I would like for them to start looking prettier at times. I would like to see them have the kind of performance in attack that we got used to from them last year. And maybe with Vasquez having finally broken through, and maybe with, Miami's struggles at defensive midfield without Gregory, it does feel like this is a potential breakout game. It does feel like one where, if suddenly there's 2, 3, 4 goals on the board by the 60th minute, it's like, oh, okay. Yeah, we should have seen this coming.
All right, let's get to match day 6 in more detail. We go to St. Louis City. They're hosting Minnesota United. Both are unbeaten. So don't go saying that we're only talking about St. Louis City as an unbeaten, perfect team. Minnesota United, also unbeaten. Connor hit us up, Dave, and said, what are the keys to victory for both teams considering how they match up? Feels like one uses a high press and the other utilizes vastly improved set-piece play to score. Of course, talking about Minnesota United in the post-Reynoso era. How do you see this matchup, Dave?
I think we talked about it on Monday. This is going to be St. Louis's first opportunity, especially at home, to probably have to have a lot of the ball. They had more of the ball against Charlotte, and Charlotte tried to counter. It isn't really in their DNA. But Minnesota is set up to win games like this. They're going to sit in a block. They're super comfortable doing that. They have a lot of options of players. We've seen them use guys who we would consider more center mids, defensive mids, out wide. And so they can put a number of bodies in the middle of the field, make you beat them from crosses, from deep crosses. And then you get to the question mark, which for St. Louis was always going to be, how can they defend in space 1v1 when they have to? It's one of the keys for a pressing team, and Tim Parker has done it in the past. He came back from the injury this weekend and partnered Lucas Bartlett, who, not going to lie, still don't get, and it's amazing. Credit to them. Lucas Bartlett is like the polar opposite of Kyle Hebert, and that's who they chose to sign, and he has fit in pretty well for them so far, but that's going to be the question marks for this St. Louis team, and it's been a question mark for every pressing team. It's like, how do you create chances? How do you create goals? It's something that Philly is still adding pieces like Joaquin Torres in the offseason to improve, and went out and got 2 DP center forwards, or one. Is Carranza DP still? Did I just make that up?
In some people's hearts, yes.
Yeah, Gazdag's a DP. It's going to be a question mark for St. Louis. It's a new challenge for them, and I think we're going to learn a lot about them after this weekend. It's one that Adrian Heath's going to be stoked about. Like, he is going to love going into the perfect St. Louis and just being an underdog. That's where he thrives. That's where he, even when it feels like they're favorites, he sort of likes that mentality. And that's not a negative, right? That's just what they've chosen. And they sort of optionally shift themselves into that. They're not going to have to do that this weekend. So it's pretty comfortable and pretty easy for them.
If Minnesota get the result, get a draw or a win, then nobody believed in us. Like, we came here, like, yeah, us against this crowd, us against everyone, post-game from Adrian, who's fired up. It's a classic. You saw them last week, didn't you, Caitlin?
Yeah. I'll be interested to see what Heath does in this one. They had, I think 7 international absences, and then, of course, no Reynoso still. So I guess you would count that as like 8 starters missing from this last one. And he had to make a little bit of a shift where he decided, I think, basically instead of going with the 4-2-3-1, to go with your best 11 players to get on the field as opposed to your preferred formation. So he goes with a 4-4-2, played Amaria and Mender Garcia up top together as a pair. It looked pretty good. Actually, they got numbers in the box that helped with Mender Garcia's goal. It was a good ball in from Zarek Valentin, whipped in some good service throughout the match. But Minnesota hasn't needed much possession at all. I think their possession numbers, Doyle, you could back me up on this, have been really low, like
really
40%
low
this season. And they've been able to get results. They've also been able to go on the road, have 2 wins on the road this season already too. So I'd be interested to see if he goes with that 2 up front again, and maybe elects to go a little bit more direct if I'm St. Louis, I would be setting those press triggers off trying to get the ball off of Boxel. If you're looking for a most likely to who's going to give Klaus a goal, like Miguel Tapia. Miguel Tapia is very good in at distribution. I would be trying to push the ball away from him.
Who's like most liable to play the back pass this week?
I don't want to throw shade at Boxel. It's just, it's not his problem. It's center backs preceding him, you know, that have led to this moment, that have made me think of it this way. Because he's been good, but Tapias has been the one I think that's they would want to have playing it out, and I would expect them to also try to be a little bit more direct and get out wide as opposed to coming through that middle.
So the two teams, I just went and looked, the two teams with the lowest percentage possession in Major League Soccer this year per game with 41.1% and 42.5%, Minnesota United 29th, St. Louis City SC 28th, Doyle. Give us a little bit of the St. Louis side. I mean, look, we can't praise Bradley Carnell enough, I don't think, for not just the job he's done in season, but clearly the job that they did as a staff preparing to hit this moment in time. What's this game mean to them? They're two away from tying Sporting Kansas City for a record that, you know, is like a record in the record books, but nobody's ever going to go back other than St. Louis and be like, oh, but.
Yeah. It is most interesting for the reasons that David and Kalen have listed, just to see how St. Louis is going to handle a team that is like Minnesota is going to defend a Dane St. Clair's lap. They're just going to draw a really deep line and invite St. Louis forward and say, come on and break us down with the ball. And they're going to try to counter off of that. And I think that St. Louis has looked a little bit susceptible to the counter, including in that first game against Charlotte. They were, you know, they got beaten up on the counter a couple of times. They will give up chances. And that's a decision that you make when you play this style. And like what it means to them beyond that, I don't know. I think they're still trying to figure out the exact right balance they want in central midfield. Are we buying Indy Vasilev as go everywhere, do everything, ball winning 8-6 hybrid? Is Leuven better in a more controlled type of setting? Like, these are questions that I think are going to become more and more pertinent as the year goes on. But right now, I don't think it's anything other than we go into this game, we carry the ball, we've shown the ability to use the ball. Let's use it to break down this low block. Does it mean they get out wide a little bit more, take a few more chances with their fullbacks? Perhaps, but I'm not sure that will be the case, because we have seen Bradley Carnell use a 4-2-3-1 selectively, and he actually used the 4-2-3-1 primarily when he was Red Bull interim coach a couple of years ago. So I wouldn't be surprised if Joe Akini gets dropped. It's Klaus up top, then it's two actual wingers, and then it's a three-man midfield underneath as a concession to the idea that you're going to have to break down the block with some ball movement and some possession and some patterns of play.
8:30 p.m. Eastern, MLS season pass, Sangbin Jung. I think word was this week he was in Canada,
yeah,
to get his visa, which he now has. He had been training sort of alongside the team a little bit, but not with the team. So he should be back in training full here and maybe available off the bench, you would think, for Minnesota. TBD, should be an amazing atmosphere. Obviously, you come back home with, you know, five wins in a row, three on the road. I still can't believe that they've won three road games already, but here we are, living in City's world. ETR games to watch. Kalen, get us started. What are you watching this weekend?
I'll take Houston at San Jose. It's at San Jose, right?
Yes, it's at San Jose.
At San Jose, okay.
Real is that a difference, isn't it? Yeah. Houston and San Jose, aren't they just...
I mean, yeah, it's the...
cycle?
Yes, jokes. Chris Wondolowski, Darby, yeah. Yeah, this...
More I like think Cam Weaver. The Cam Weaver. Oh, the Cam my Weaver. God! Yeah, there you go! Hey!
I like that.
Tom Kinnear's having a great show right now. He's loving it.
Have you been seeing his tactical breakdowns, by the way?
How I learned.
It's a new dawn, a new day in Major League Soccer.
I'm a student at the foot of the master.
Thank you. Yeah. No, Ben Olsen, you guys went through it on Monday, I thought, very well, giving some props. I mean, even when I was watching their last match against New York City, they used Brooklyn Reigns, I think 18 years old, stepped in, did very well. It was interesting to me, too, how they used him. I think he's more of a natural six, but defensively, they pushed him higher as almost like a second striker at times. And it was almost
the
way
he's played as an eight for the most part for them coming. Okay. I think that's where they project him.
It reminded me of a little bit of the way when New York put Tyler Adams as like a 10 to press. I remember in the playoffs against Toronto, they ended up losing the game anyways, but it really threw things off in that second leg up there against Michael Bradley and that crew. So I think, you know, they're doing some interesting things as far as their pressing coming out of a 4-4-2, but playing out of a 4-3-3, the way they're holding possession, the ball. Hector Herrera has been amazing. You know, I think Artur has been a really good partner for him. Still some questions as far as where the goals come from. Sebas Ferreira, not to have this success that they've had right now and not have him involved. He's just basically been coaching decision, just sat. I think they signed a new center back from Norway? I think he might be Norwegian international, yeah, which is a place they wanted to, I think, upgrade that position at a little bit of. I think he's going to start and come in and help. So, but yeah, so that's the Houston side, and then I like the Lucci's team so far as well. I think it's tough without Guerrero. I think he's still injured. It's going to change them a little bit, but overall, they've been really good to start the season.
We're over-indexing on Norwegians here. Not actually from Norway, from Denmark.
My bad.
That's the Anders effect.
Dang, we got the right producer for that.
Yeah. Well, you know, this show's been difficult for me. Every time I ask a question, I just look down at the chat because Anders immediately answers it. Yeah. So I'm very confused half the time.
Both are different. Yeah.
Dave, what do you got? What's the game you're watching, man? By the way, 10:30 p.m. Eastern, season pass for Dynamo Quakes.
I'm going to take an obvious one and say the LA Galaxy against the Seattle Sounders, two of the gigantes in Major League Soccer, historically facing off against each other. They've had great matchups in the past. The Galaxy are one of the big question marks in Major League Soccer. I was surprised by how much confidence there was in them by many people coming into the season, but was kind of expecting to be proven wrong. And it's been somewhere in the middle so far. So this is a good opportunity for them. Like, if they can put together a good performance against Seattle, I think it shows a different side of them. And Seattle have been pretty ruthless so far. So if the Galaxy leave the openings that we've seen them leave, Jordan Morris might be looking at another NFL style game for himself. And there are other options as well for this team. So I think this is going to be open. I think it's going to be fun. The Galaxy don't have a different way that they can play. So they're going to have to push numbers forward and try and create chances.
David, do you think that because of that, the Sounders are at the top of basically every possession stat in the league this year? They're getting the most touches, longest passing sequences, most expected goals and actual goals off long passing sequences. They're creating the widest passing sequences. So it's going from touchline to touchline. They are... With João Paulo back and Lodeiro looking, you know, 24 instead of 34, like, they are the dominant ball using team in MLS this year, and they're going to a Galaxy team that every single week is just like, come please counterattack us, because we'll lose the ball in ridiculous spots and we are not great in transition defense. So do you think we see a little bit of the old Sounders in terms of saying, hey, you guys take the ball? I think we have an idea of how we're going to beat this up.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, this is a team that has done that since Brian Schmetzer's taken over, which is they kind of don't really care. They allow game states to decide things. They know they've got match winners and they don't mind doing that. So they took more possession against KC, which probably isn't the way you'd write it up, you know, going to KC. You'd say the same thing as you would about the Galaxy. Oh, we'll sit in a little, let you possess and hit you in transition. They didn't do that as much. They also blew them off the field. So then you get into game
state. Had a man advantage for a long time, too.
Yeah, you get into game states at some point as well. But yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if Seattle comes out in a tight block and sits a little deeper and just continually tries to get Morris and Roldan or whoever else is out there into the gaps where we expect the fullbacks for the Galaxy to leave space.
Especially Caligari. I mean, they were tucked in Raheem last week, but Caligari is way up the field. Seems like that left side where Leo Chu and Morris went crazy. And obviously Nico Ladero dropping into that space, either as a way to keep Caligari back and prevent the Galaxy from progressing, or just to fill that gap in transition. Do they go Leo Chu and Jordan Morris? I mean, Raul is back.
Yeah, if Raul's back, they start Raul, right?
So they're not going to start Leo Chu. But logically, you could steal 65 minutes for Raul Ruiz Diaz to, you know, have flown back from Europe and get a rest, and or Eber to come back a little bit slower. But nothing in the past 7 years tells you that Brian Schmetzer won't start Raul Ruiz Diaz in this game if he's available.
Should be an interesting one. Galaxy have a steep hill to climb.
Is Chicharito back, Weeby? Is there?
I don't know, man.
Wind signal thing.
Yeah. Since I moved, I haven't set up the shrine, so I'm not getting the same sort of communication from LA that I often did. You know, that little candle flicker at the right moment, or you know, like a little bit of spilled. I don't know, whatever it is that I kept on the fake shrine. The Galaxy are in trouble. I think they're having. I saw a stat the other day from Opta that was like Ricky Pooj has the longest distance carried on the ball in the league. And when you looked at the graph, all of those carries are nowhere near the final third, basically. And like part and parcel of having the ball a lot, which the Galaxy do, is that you're going to have more opportunities to carry. To me, a whole bunch of basically horizontal, not vertical carries by Ricky Pooj on the field is sort of a symptom of what isn't working right now for the Galaxy, which, and Greg Vanney's just said it over and over and over again, like, yeah, we're possessing the ball, but there come moments in the way that he wants to play where you have to recognize that an opportunity is there to speed play up, and you have to go. And you also need a center forward who's going to drop in and let Ricky advance. And Dan Jovlich has not been the best at that so far, though he's, I think he's getting better, and they don't create chances because of it, because if you don't do all that, you don't get your wingers in position to cross, and if your wingers are not particularly good, well, then you're the Galaxy and you don't have a win in the opening month of the season. Doyle, game to watch. What is it for you?
Orlando versus Nashville. We've all, well, not all of us, because David is against Orlando, but the rest of us have kind of strongly...
That one's not going to age well, by the way. I think we're going to win that one. He's holding the Galaxy
really?
One. Yeah. I think it's
you think you're going to come out on top on that?
I think so.
Why?
I'll take I'm going to take the early L on the Galaxy, because I probably, if I had to guess, I don't remember, was one of the ones that were like, yeah, Galaxy, blah, blah, blah. But I'm not taking the L on Orlando.
Oh, Galaxy lost one of their final 12 games down the stretch last year. And they really went at LAFC in the playoffs as well. It wasn't crazy to think that the Galaxy would spin that forward into 2023 and be better. As for Orlando, we all thought that they would be better because of the talent upgrades to their roster and because
they house bring, phone
yeah
that's hey, don't call the text and text somebody, don't call the home phone during recording hours. Thank you very much.
That's not a house phone, I swear. Anyway, I'm 46. I'm not 112.
Is that the chat buzzer? That's
like, second.
We all thought
the armchair analyst.
We all thought Orlando would be really good this year, but I think we all understood that given their early year CCL commitments, that great series against Tigres, and given how Oscar Pereja traditionally has his team play at the start of the year, which is to say against the ball, we didn't expect it to come together right away. And I think what we've seen over the past couple of weeks is they've been a little bit less defensive, a little bit more expansive on the ball. And that includes this past weekend without Facu Torres, who was on international duty with Uruguay, with him back, with the hierarchy in midfield sort of straightened out a little bit, and, you know, some options at center forward, kind of juggling which one of those are better. I do think that we're going to start to see Orlando carry games more and use that to actually create more chances than they have been. It'll be difficult to do it against a national team that is only too happy to let other teams do that heavy lifting, right? Like if Orlando come out and they put their foot on the ball and say, we're the ones who's going to be dictating games, Nashville's going to be like, okay, this is completely fine. You know, we're going to defend in the 18 because we have Walker Zimmerman and your guy, the milkman there at center back. And And Joe Willis is still a very good, you know, a very good goalkeeper. And they're like, they're the most comfortable team in the league in playing on the back foot like that. So I'm curious. It's almost for the same reasons that I'm curious to see St. Louis going into this weekend against Minnesota, because I think Orlando City is going to face some, like, almost the exact same thing in Nashville.
When you see Martino Ojeda score, Dave, what do you?
I'm happy for him. That's
like
great.
Is it, you know, like sunlight to a vampire?
It's great. And I don't really have anything against this team. I will say they have had the roughest start in terms of, I don't think any of us know what has changed. Like with CCL rotating their squad, then an international break, going to Philly and winning 2-1 is incredible. But I don't know that any of it's really indicative of who they are. I will say, you know, the floor is pretty high because of what you saw against Tigres, which is Oscar Pereira will have his team ready to go in big games, and they will do what they need to physically. Like, Schlegel ended the Philly game, I think it was, on a sliding tackle, like into the final whistle, taking a guy out. Like, that's what this team is. And so, yeah, if that quality is there, it's awesome. I don't know that it's going to, what I've said the whole time, again, why it's taken Martino Ojeda so long, is like, I don't know how long it takes for a lot of those guys in the final third. They have Ivan Angulo, who is, I'm pretty sure, Oscar Pereja's like dream player built in a lab. The guy grinds like he played college soccer, but has the skill of a Colombian developed player. But they, you know, it'll be an interesting game for sure against Nashville.
All right, 7:30 p.m. Eastern on that one. I'm going to take Chicago Fire, DC United.
Wow.
Yes. Yes. This is in honor of Kalen, obviously. We've got a Houston one in our games to watch and a Fire one in the games to watch. 8:30 p.m.
Eastern. Is Jesse Marsh going to play in this game?
Kai Kamara is going to wear a headband, hopefully, to in honor of
him. No helmet. He couldn't get on the helmet track.
Not okay. The headband era in Chicago.
Anyway. Yeah, that's true. Different era. Yeah. You're right. Let me get timeline straight here. Yeah, look, I just want to call people's attention to what Brian Gutierrez has done in the last two games at the 10 for the Fire. He stretches back lines. He uses that threat in behind, and a sneaky speed that he has and timing that he has to then play off the back shoulder and drop into the half spaces. And he's gotten on the turn and he's found players and runners in front of him. And he's paced the ball beautifully. He's put it in the right spots so they can finish, whether that's Kasper Schabilko and that beautiful curler. You might have been like, oh yeah, I remember the curler, but who played the pass? Well, it's Brian Gutierrez with a brilliant little turn after dropping off. The goal that Chris Mueller smashed 2 weeks ago, that's him as well, getting in behind and then playing across the box. Nice cutback on that one. Then, of course, Kai Kamara is driving forward. I mean, he's been very, very good, and he's had opportunities to score as well, and he hasn't quite gotten the right touch on them or been in sort of the right footwork moment. But Shaqiri is supposedly almost there or there, like could be back in this game. And this is a huge decision for Ezra Henriksen to make. I mean, the last two games, they've scored three goals with a 19-year-old homegrown at the 10. I don't know how you get them both on the field at the same time, because Chicago asks a good amount from the guys playing on either side of the 10 defensively. That's been Haile Selassie and then Mueller in this last game. And I don't know that that's where you want to put Shaqiri, to be perfectly honest. And I don't know that's where you want to put Gutierrez either. Doyle, I don't think he hasn't looked the same as a quote-unquote winger in this system as he has the central player behind a nine. I'm curious what you think about this decision for Ezra.
Right now, Brian Gutierrez, we said it the other day on Monday, Brian Gutierrez is just a better soccer player right now than Jordan Shaqiri. What he's done at the number 10, whenever he's gotten a chance to play there over the past year, speaks for itself. So that's where you start from, and then you figure out, well, Shaqiri has played most of his career as a winger at the club level. You can play him on the right wing. It changes how you use your right back a little bit, but you went out and you got a 30-year-old veteran right back. You're not playing with a kid at that spot. You're playing with someone who should understand how the game changes when you're playing behind an inverting attacking winger as opposed to more of a north-south guy, which is what traditionally Ezra has had out there. And I just like the idea of Shaqiri being in a spot where he can worry more about attacking goal than about orchestrating, because he's showed in a year in change that he's not really an orchestrator, right? He's not wired like a number 10. So I think that's the solution. I don't know if we're going to see that that weekend. Is Shaqiri going to be back this weekend?
I don't think – I wouldn't expect him to be back in a starting role, but he is, according to all reports, very close to being ready. So,
but still, they've scored three goals in their last two matches without him. So you're not – and Shaqiri's not coming into the team to help defensively, right? So there's no it's like if it ain't broke, like you got to fight your way back into the team, and you have to give up a lot to play Shaqiri defensively. It's been that way everywhere he's ever played, and some teams can account for it when you have the ball the whole game, or if in systems where that works. In other situations it hasn't worked. Even at times with Chicago it hasn't worked. And so I think for the young Gutierrez to be getting these moments, getting, you know, and they're getting goals out of it, I feel like you keep playing that hand, and and then you worry about Shaqiri being a difference maker off the bench.
You're also watching the lineup for DC and Wayne Rooney as well. I mean, I'm obviously watching for Chicago for that number 10 decision, but he's chopped and changed a decent amount this year. Seems like he's starting to settle into some things, whether it's, you know, Miller at goal, you got Williams and Birnbaum at center back, TBD at the outside back positions right now. They've got some injury issues that they're working through. Nahar's not been around, and the Iraqi international they signed in the offseason has an apparent thigh injury as well. But then it's Knauss and it's Click, and then Benteke, and now I guess Taxi Fontas. So I'm at this moment giving DC an incomplete on the season. That's my grade for DC United right now. But we do have a mail that I think is interesting. So we didn't hit it. Lewis O'Brien on loan to DC for a year from Nottingham Forest of the Premier League. I know we all watched very closely Lewis O'Brien's development at Bradford as well as Huddersfield Town, given that this is a, you know, it's MLS than the Champo for this particular podcast. Any thoughts on Lewis O'Brien? Ted Meyer would like to know about them. You know, the scouting report on him basically is that he is a ball-carrying midfielder, like advances the ball upfield, very good technically. How would you play him?
Yeah, I think that Rooney wants to play a 4-3-3 with a single pivot. So I guess the idea would be to put Knauss deep as the six and then O'Brien and Cleek as the number eights, because Cleek is more of an eight than a 10. And it sounds like O'Brien is more of an eight than a 10. Put those two guys in front of them, but then you're relying upon your wingers to really do a lot of the pure chance creation. And the issue with that is Fontas isn't really a winger. He's more of a second forward, and Rodriguez is hurt. And okay, then it's on Ted Kudipietro, who's a nice player, but I'm not sure he's a high volume chance creator. He played Juan at right wing last week.
Durkin's at right back right now, which is interesting.
So it's just the roster is, look, the reports out of DC for years has been that there's like six people making roster decisions, you know, and the roster at this point, and I think that's not the case anymore, right? I think that Wayne Rooney is now making the decisions, but there's like still a lot of tearing down that needs to be done before something coherent can be built up. And to be fair, part of that is on Wayne Rooney for pushing signings like Ravel Morrison and Victor Paulsen last summer.
Hang on. Starting central midfielder and Jamaican national team that gets a result at the Azteca, Ravel Morrison.
Oh my God.
So the loan for O'Brien is actually just 6 months. So it runs up in July. So
through the end of the season in England.
Well, I mean, DC will be eliminated from playoff contention by then anyway. So there you go.
I think there was something where a move fell through because I was.
Yeah, he had another move that.
Yeah. So I think he just kind of became available. And it's like, hey, I think DC's at a place where they're like, we need quality. Can grab a player that he'll help us for a little bit. And then we'll go, you know, if you have to go back, you get minutes, you're playing, because he wasn't registered, I think, still at Nottingham Forest.
Yeah,
so he couldn't play elsewhere, or he couldn't stay there and play. And so I think it was just like, oh, this is, you know, somebody we realize is in a tough spot, we can help, who can help us right away.
And
I don't know what the long-term plan is, you know, if they can extend the loan or if they can,
but if they get talent for a few months, I think this is one that you chalk up to like Wayne Rooney.
Like
this is one where Rooney's draw probably brings a player who's maybe a borderline Premier League player into your team out of nowhere when you don't expect it.
If
all of it's enough, I'm not sure, but you'd assume you're better off with him in your team than not.
Yeah.
And I would be surprised that DC would have been able to make this move without Rooney. So it's positive for them. And I would say on Joel's point, the dual eights, there's actually been some good moments this year where Click's gone wide. He's had, I think, two assists to Benteke from wide area. So it probably opens him up as well to just float, whether it's alongside O'Brien or just go out and find the game. And O'Brien can cover a bit more ground for DC. So exciting times for DC United.
We've sold it well. Three goals on the year for Benteke, by the way. So this is one of those games that, like, if you're not a Fire or a DC fan, you might look at the schedule and be like, oh, no, not for me. But I think this one's actually pretty interesting. 8:30 p.m. Eastern. La Bombilla hit us up and said, what's missing for the Red Bulls and how can they remedy their issues maintaining more consistent possession? I'm going to read that again. How can they remedy their issues maintaining more consistent possession?
Who wants to take it?
That's bait.
Feels like bait.
I like the fact that somebody is like tuning in each week to be like, oh, why aren't they keeping the ball here? It's like,
for those who aren't following along,
stop the Red going Bulls, direct.
Yeah, the Red Bulls explicitly play a style of soccer that does not care about possession, does not even care about completing passes. They just care about field position. As long as they're creating 50-50s in the spots where they want to create 50-50s, then they're doing the job as per the blueprint written up by Ralf Ragnick 15 years ago. This past weekend, what? They attempted about 200 passes, which
208.
Yeah, extraordinarily low, and they completed 49% of them. They're not going to, so, which is
there's intentionality to numbers like that, is what we're saying.
The premise of the question was faulty. The real question is, when are they going to start turning their ability to win challenges all over the field into attempts on goal and goals? And the answer to that is, I still do not know.
What is the percentage of arguments in your household that end with the premise to your point or question is wrong?
Oh,
now
it's really
girls use that two or three times.
It's really the only way I could win an argument with Rebecca is if I just tell her I don't accept the premise of what she's saying. Otherwise, she trounces me every time.
Okay, that's what I thought. It's a safe Kakito, way to get around things.
Kakito is the only one I could win an argument with. Baby girl also trounces me.
So. Gotcha. By the way, Atlanta hosting Red Bulls this weekend. We're going to see previous, I was going to call it old Atlanta and new Atlanta, but like not last week Atlanta or last week Atlanta. What are we going to see against the Red Bulls? What do you guys think? Bad question. Horrible premise. Doyle
somewhere
rejects
in between.
Yeah, Doyle rejects the premise of that question.
I mean, I have an answer. I just didn't want to, you know, monopolize all the time. But I'll say I think that, you know, Almada being back allows them to play a double pivot deeper in central midfield. They tried a single pivot last week. That was a disaster. And then Miles Robinson might be a more important returnee to this 11 than Almada is, specifically because his passing has been really good. He's able to break lines with passing. He's much more comfortable on the ball than I think people give him credit for. And that's not just avoiding pressure. That's actually like carrying the ball off the back line past the first line of pressure. And if you start doing that against the Red Bulls, then you're going to be in good shape. So I do not think that last weekend's 6-1 loss is indicative of anything that's going to happen in this game.
7:30 p.m. Eastern, Philadelphia hosting Sporting Kansas City. Oh, sorry.
Oh, now he wants to come in. Okay.
Can I follow up? No, just with a question. No, just as a question. So, because, you know, the two players that are interested in potentially having a move or this summer even would be, well, I guess Miles is a little different situation with his contract, but Thiago Almada. So was this more of a statement to say that this, apologies if you guys already nailed this, but if he leaves, should you be more concerned if you're an Atlanta fan watching last weekend?
I just don't think, I reject the premise of the question. I think if and when Atlanta sell him, like they would have to get absolutely bowled over to let him go midseason. I think it'll be a sell and loan back for the rest of the 2023 season, and then he's gone in January.
Okay. Jacob Parsons, Philadelphia Union tweeted that all signs are pointing to a positive return for Andre Blake to the group on the weekend. The hope is that he does play on Saturday. They host Sporting Kansas City. Sporting Kansas City, the creators of many low XG chances, screaming in frustration at this news. They have attracted great goalkeeper performances this season, or at least performances that include a lot of saves. Many goalkeepers who have faced Sporting have ended up in Team of the Week, and to see Andre come back is tough news for Sporting Kansas City, who are still looking for their first win on the season. Jacob Parsons from Austin hit us up and said, can you talk about the massive steps and improvement Daniel Pereira has made from last year to this year? We argued in the pre-show meeting that he was incredible last year, and maybe the reason you're seeing it more obviously this year is the lack of incredible performances around him in this Austin team while he maintains his level. But we have made a list in honor of this tweeted question, Dave, and it is my invitation to you to take us through the list of players who have made massive steps in improvement this year from last year. It's my gift to you.
I appreciate that. I do believe that someone is trolling me on the list because the first name is Hector Herrera.
No, what?
So I don't believe that's the purpose of what we're doing. But some of the names we came around to was Alex Matan, who I don't know if he's up for Gauss Theorem because of how many years, but he's been phenomenal out of pretty much the smoldering ashes.
He had not registered a goal or assist in 2 years in Columbus. He had 3 assists last weekend, man.
I don't think he had registered 10 minutes living in Columbus in 2 years.
Wait, are we just going through the comeback player of the year early front runners?
Sort of, pretty much. I threw Brandon Cervagna on there. I think he's been really good for Toronto. I think he's been equally as good with Dallas, but Toronto needs him to play, and he's playing minutes, and so he's been in there. I think Jackson Reagan's taken a step.
Agreed.
This year, he looks really comfortable on the ball, especially in their build-outs. Through him, it's part of why they can just not play Xavier Arriaga, who's been a starter in some of their biggest games ever over the last few years.
What class is it? MLS perfection of like Konma Bowl starter, spot starter Xavier Arriaga. There's like, no, but we got Jackson Reagan. Like,
of course, you can't break through. I think Doyle said Alvaro Barrial, which I thought was a really good one. He converted to wing back last year. He has now looked even more comfortable out there this year. And in games when Lucho's not been on the field, he's their outlet. Like, he is their attack through that left side. And now I think as they've improved the center back position as well, it allows him a little bit more freedom to do his thing. Mender Garcia, we talked about already, scoring goals. Andres Reyes has stepped in and been phenomenal alongside Sean Nealis. Nealis was probably would have been on this list last year. Reyes steps in this year. And then St. Louis was a tough one. It's pretty much every MLS player on the St. Louis roster is having a better year this year. John Nelson, Jared Stroud, Indy Vasilev, Tim Parker, you could say as well.
Could definitely say you would.
Jake Nowinski for sure. Like, Joachini? I didn't know that this is possible.
Joachini's probably the best shout because he was basically not used at all in Orlando last year, and he's been really good as a second forward playing off of Klaus, and he's toggling between actually dropping into midfield and getting on the ball and sort of facilitating play, not being a creator, but like he's really decisive with the pass, like the spaces he's taking and the passes he's making, and then decisive again off the ball. So it's just like injecting that type of pace and being able to play off the shoulder at the same time and being a threat on set pieces at the same time. You're right, David. Like, basically everyone who has played in MLS before that is on this St. Louis roster is playing better this year. And that's a credit to Bradley Carnell, 100%.
Do we hit Mender Garcia?
I mentioned him.
Okay, good. Just wanted to make sure Mender got his flowers on this podcast. Tony DeToro hit us up and said, LAFC, talk about him. At age 34, is Carlos Vela well and truly done as a top player, or is he merely playing out of position until the slot vacated by Chicho is filled? Kalen, as a noted old, is Carlos Vela well and truly done?
No. And I don't think he's done.
This,
I don't know if we're going to
tee up. I reject the premise of your question.
I reject the premise. This is offensive. This is ageist. All of the
when
above.
When has he been done? Has he kept being good?
Yeah, he's good. I think the idea is maybe more of like, are we going to see the 34 goal a season?
No.
Carlos Vela. No, but that's not what they need from him. Like, that's not what's
required. They could use it.
The
look on his face as the penalty loops off the crossbar over his head from this weekend is pretty... It's good artwork.
Yeah, it's bemusement. Yeah. It's certainly like...
Yeah. He's looking up like, how did that end up there? Is kind of what it went, how it went down. So if he hits more penalty kicks, then he'd score more.
Yeah, goals. But he saw that as he turned, he saw the star on his jersey, and he's like, you know, it turns out I don't care. Like, it's all good. we're gonna get one. Danny Bawanga's here.
Yeah.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. How about this one? Rick, guys, I have an ETR mailbag question. Who besides Messi, we're already counting Messi as a counting him as coming. Could we see make a move to MLS this summer as a big international name? He said Thomas Mueller, perhaps.
Marcus Rashford.
Any names? Yeah, any names out there that like jump out to you that you'd like to see in MLS?
Lewandowski?
No, not with Barca having paid $40 million for him last year. He's under contract for.
They would take the $40 million.
They would, but MLS ain't paying that for a 35-year-old. No. No, I don't know. It's more interesting to think about the younger guys for me, to think about the next Thiago Almada or Facu Torres or Santi Rodriguez or the next kids coming out of the academy. I think that's where MLS is going. And I think that, look, there's only one Messi. We're seeing all these, all this reporting, all these rumors, all this speculation about his coming and what it would take to get him here, because there's only one Leo Messi. And you move heaven and earth to get him in the league if you have that chance. But for other guys, even for someone as great as Lewandowski or Karim Benzema, it's a different calculus. It doesn't mean the same thing in terms of creating what you can create for your club. It just doesn't.
I'm going to say Kyle Aaron.
He should have been in over the winter. Somebody should have jumped on that before Valladolid got him. He would have been perfect for... Go ahead.
The leading goal scorer on the planet in World Cup qualifying.
Yeah.
The planet.
Yep.
You'd have to go to Mars to find a better goal scorer. Come on!
Yeah, that's
big names.
That's one thing you would have to do, for sure. All right, let's end
also,
it here.
Also, potential national championship school graduate, right? Not on the women's side, no paper.
That's the one. I don't think this show can survive UConn winning the Natty. Can we come back in person if that happens? I don't think so.
Next week could be rough.
From Caleb, or as he's known by his nickname, Shiloh. Long email here. Thank you so much, Caleb, for listening to the show. He's a recent addition to our crew of sickos. And he ends his email with this two sentences that I just like base my entire life around, which is, I love the show and I re-listen to episodes because they aren't long enough while I'm at work.
Wow.
I hope you all have a fantastic week and thank you for all you do to entertain the entire MLS family.
That is
you heard it here first.
Made up email from Andrew Wiebe.
Shiloh, Caleb, aka Shiloh, says that he re-listens to episodes because they're not long enough, Anders. I just want you to bask in that. Feedback.
Should we keep going? Should we keep going?
Glory. Anders says we have 3 more minutes, so we could just hang out for a little bit. I don't know. What do you think? I'll save that energy for when we're in person. All right. Enjoy the weekend, everybody. Match day 6, MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. We'll be back on Monday to break it all down. Adios.